Blog Talk Radio.
My job today, my goal today, is to blow your socks off. That almost sounded dirty, but it didn't when I finished the sentence. My job is to blow your socks off. Get your mind out of the gutter. That's disgusting. So I made a Trump ad over the weekend. I'm sitting there. I'm editing the show. I was uploading and whatnot, doing all the stuff that I have to do for the show on any given day. And as I was editing the segment about Hillary Clinton's attack ads on Trump, I thought, why don't I just make one? Why don't I just make an attack ad and show people how the fuck it's done? Because we always, everybody knows this if you listen to the show, but we always talk a big game, but especially when it comes to stuff like marketing for the Democrats and how to attack the Republicans. But we don't really walk the walk, at least in the sense that we've never made an attack ad before. So I decided to make an attack ad, and man, it's devastating. And if this were something that was actually run against Trump and run ad nauseum, ad infinitum, man, he would get so destroyed in a general election, it would be ridiculous. I was tweeting about this. I said, we could run Steve Urkel against Donald Trump and win if we attack him the right way. So I can't wait to show you that. You're going to have to hold on a little bit because I'm not opening with that. You never open with your closer, by definition, actually. Speak to any comedian, that's how it works. But I have that for you, I don't know, maybe the beginning of the second hour or perhaps at the end of the first hour I'll have that for you. But I got a lot of other stuff as well. We have a pro-Hillary super PAC that's at it again. Just being totally slimy and disingenuous against Bernie. Wait until I tell you what they're up to now. There's a hilarious new report out from CNN about how Republicans thought they could have stopped Trump, but there's no way that this would have actually stopped Trump, so I will mock it ruthlessly. And later on in the show, we have the leader of Al-Qaeda releasing a message. Oh, boy. But yet again, he's going to repeat something that we've said. You know, if the West listened to what the fuck he was saying, we'd learn a lot, but nobody listens. So there's going to be a clear message here to the West, and believe you me, it will be ignored, but we're going to highlight it because I think it's very important in terms of learning how to defeat them. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started, and we're going to do that with the new sleazy methods, or actually you can't even call them new, just the sleazy methods being used against Bernie Sanders. So recently we covered the story of the pro-Hillary Clinton super PAC that's spending $1 million to respond to criticism of her online, and today we have a similarly pathetic story. Now, when we covered the last story, I let you guys know that that's actually kind of breaking election law as well. There's supposed to be no coordination whatsoever between super PACs and the campaign. But in this case, they're using a loophole where they say, no, it's okay for us to coordinate to respond to criticism online because blog posts and social media posts and things of that nature, they're free. So therefore, you know, we're allowed to coordinate because we're not doing it on something that costs money, like an ad, for example. Again, people should see the red flag on that immediately and call bullshit on that immediately because they're spending $1 million to respond to criticism online. So they are paying for it. Just because the nature of blogs and social media is free doesn't mean that you're not literally paying. And obviously, you're coordinating. You're not supposed to coordinate if you're in the super PAC and the campaign. You're supposed to stay separate. This is one of the few election laws we still have in the United States of America. Hillary's people are ignoring that, and how pathetic is it that this is how they respond to criticism online? You know the criticism is landing when you have to pay people to respond to it. I'm not kidding. That's a trick that Russia used recently when it came to the whole Crimea incident, and they basically annexed part of Crimea. You had the Russian government pay for people on social media to respond to criticism. It's unbelievable. But it gets even worse. It gets more egregious. So Li Feng of The Intercept explains here. A few days before the Georgia primary, influential Atlanta mayor Kasim Reed published a column on CNN.com praising Hillary Clinton and ripping her opponent Bernie Sanders. Reed attacked Sanders as being out of step with Democrats on gun policy and accused him of elevating a one-issue platform that ignores the plight of the single mother riding two buses to her second job. Yeah, right. Bernie's not sufficiently fighting for her. He continues here. They continue. But emails released from Reed's office indicate that the column, which pilloried Sanders as out of touch with the poor, was primarily written by a corporate lobbyist and was edited by Correct the Record, one of several pro-Clinton super PACs. Oh, boy. So this is even worse than just, you know, paying random eggs on Twitter to respond to accurate criticism of Hillary. This is taking an influential former Atlanta mayor saying that he wrote this piece against Bernie and for Hillary, but in reality the piece was written by a corporate lobbyist, further proving Bernie Sanders correct about virtually everything he says. And really, that's the argument you're going to make. The argument they made is, oh, Bernie Sanders, I mean, the problem with this guy is he's not sufficiently in favor of the poor. What? No, but this goes back to the stupid ads that Hillary ran in the midst of the campaign against Bernie, where she attacked him because he keeps hitting Wall Street. And they ran an ad where, you know, in the debates, for example, Bernie would keep reverting to the point of Wall Street being corrupt and broken and they bought our government. And they made it seem like it was a bad thing. Like, oh, look at this guy, always coming back to one issue, the issue of corruption and money in politics and the fact that Wall Street bought our government. How out of touch is he? No, how out of touch are you? Don't see that that's the one issue that affects all other issues, namely money in politics, then you're the problem. And of course she's going to, you know, try not to see that because she takes so much money from Wall Street and from corporations that she's the biggest benefactor of said system. And again, in the criticism of him, she's proving his point. Because it's like, oh, one issue candidate, corruption, all the lobbyists and whatnot, Wall Street buying the system. Anyway, read this op-ed where a corporate lobbyist writes about how Bernie is wrong. The fact that the corporate lobbyist wrote it proves that Bernie is right. No, this is unbelievable. I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again. The worst possible Democrat, save maybe, I don't know, five or six other blue dogs who are a little bit worse than Hillary. But outside of them, she's the worst possible Democrat to get the nomination. I mean, you go down the list of the things she's been wrong on and how her record is a disaster, and you'll see that this isn't a debate. This isn't a question. I mean, there was an article that came out. It was the headline in Huffington Post on Sunday. It said something like, closeted or closet progressive Hillary Clinton. And the article, it's almost like just a simple case of thou dost protest too much. It's like they're begging and pleading with people in the Democratic base that don't like her. Like, no, seriously, she's super progressive, and she's a closet progressive. And I mean, she's really progressive, just sometimes she doesn't show it, and her voting record doesn't indicate that, and she doesn't do progressive things, but she's progressive, and because her voting record is so bad, it ironically, in a jujitsu kind of way, proves that she's progressive. Gotcha. Tapped you out. No, you didn't. You look like an idiot. Well, it's the same thing here. I mean, it's amazing how pompous and arrogant she is in that when she's asked, hey, how are you going to get Bernie supporters who aren't, you know, on board with voting for you? She basically lectures them and looks down on them and says, I got more votes. Basically saying, get over it. Vote for me. Who else are you going to go to? She treats Bernie voters that way. And we cover the story on Friday, how who's she reaching out to? Bush donors. She's reaching out to Bush donors on Wall Street. And she's saying to them, I represent your values better than Donald Trump. People who were supporting Jeb Bush and who are Bush family donors, she called them and said, I'll represent your values better. So interesting how in the general election, she wholly abandons the real progressives and liberals in the country, the base of the Democratic Party, and she fully embraces people who are so-called moderate Republicans because she takes so much Wall Street money. She can't help herself. She can't fucking help herself. You pay for people to respond to criticism online because the criticism is true. And now we know that you have people, your surrogates, who write articles for you that aren't even written by them. It's written by corporate lobbyists. This is all you have. Her entire campaign is propped up by money and coasting off of name recognition. That's it. She's depending on the ignorance of people in the Democratic Party to vote for her. Democratic Party loyalists who know the name Clinton and they go, okay, I guess I'll vote for her. But other than that, other than the name recognition and the celebrity status, all you have is this facade propped up by corporate money. You're propped up by corporate money to half the time pretend that you're progressive when you're obviously no such thing. This is why Bernie Sanders is by far and away a better candidate. And believe me, it's not just me saying that. It's also the polls saying that. In a general election, he does better. He gets way more independents. And her stupid strategy to get more independents is to do the opposite of what Bernie Sanders does. Run further to the right, alienating independents more. Well done, Hillary. Okay. Now we're going to go to a report from CNN about the Republican election that is honestly, it's just comical at this point what the Republican establishment thinks. Okay. Sorry, I'm jotting stuff down here as I'm live on air. Professional. It's what I do. There's a hilarious new report out from CNN about how Republican officials thought they could stop Donald Trump. Blaine here. Republican officials who oppose Donald Trump as their party nominee have spent the last few days, ever since the withdrawal from the race of Cruz and Kasich, wondering if there's anything they could have done to prevent this outcome. Top officials of the Cruz campaign are convinced there is one specific step that could have stopped Trump, and they blame Senator Marco Rubio for not taking that step. Okay, so you're probably thinking, well, wait, what does Marco Rubio have to do with this? He dropped out eons ago. How does that make any sense? Well, the idea is that the Cruz campaign reached out to the Rubio campaign, and they said, all right, here's what we're going to do. You are going to be my VP, and that's going to be the way we stop Trump. Now, apparently Rubio said no. He had no interest in it whatsoever. But people in the Republican establishment are absolutely, positively convinced that if at the end, instead of going with Fiorina, if the Cruz campaign was able to get Rubio, well then, hello, dream team here. We got Pippen and Jordan, and obviously they're going to take down Trump. I mean, don't be stupid. That's how it's going to go down. As I read this article, I thought there's never been better evidence that the Republican establishment is massively out of touch with even their own voters. Because all their predictions every step of the way has been dead wrong. And this one would have been no different. So, like, no, totally. This was the solution right here. If we had a Cruz-Rubio ticket, man, they would have destroyed Trump. Except there's no reason to believe that whatsoever. Marco Rubio was polling at negative 800%. He lost his own home state. So he's not popular in any way. And Cruz is deeply, deeply unlikable. And the only places in the country that he has appeal are places that are super rural and only indicative of those places. They're not representative of a mood in the country at large. So, for example, Cruz wins in places like Iowa. But towards the end of the campaign, he couldn't even win in similar places. So his appeal was limited to begin with, but then later on in the campaign, Trump started overtaking him even in those states, which is why he lost Indiana. So this idea, like, all they're doing is revisionist history at this point. They're like, well, if we did X, Y, and Z, well, then we totally could have stopped Trump. Ah, why didn't we think of it? Oh, we're so silly. No, if you did that, you also would have gotten your asses handed to you on a silver platter, and you would have been scratching your head in the same way you are right now. So that's not true. Here's what they don't get. Donald Trump actually has appeal to working class people. Rightly or wrongly, I would say wrongly, because I think he's a liar, and he has a history of being a con artist. So, I don't think he'd actually do anything for those people, but he is appealing to those people, and he's getting their vote. So, for example, on trade, he says, no more stupid free trade deals. We're going to do protectionism. We're going to slap tariffs on products that were made by U.S. corporations that moved outside the country. 35% tariff on your product there, now you're going to want to move back to the country. He says stuff like that, and guess what? People like it. So even the Republican base, everybody thought all along, like, oh, I mean, the Republican base voter, they care deeply about free market to laissez-faire conservative ideology. No, they don't. The only reason they were voting for Republicans all along is because they thought that, oh, these people are representing me, these people are fighting for me. Now, they're not. The Republican Party has not been the party of the working class. But people thought, well, they want to keep my taxes lower, so that's why I'll vote for them. But over time, it became obvious, well, these guys all want to outsource all our jobs. It's fucking crazy. So Donald Trump comes along, and he's like, no, I don't want to outsource your jobs. I want to keep your jobs here. So now a lot of blue-collar workers are like, yeah, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. Again, wrongly, because I don't think he's going to change anything. His own fucking ties are made in China, so he's a massive hypocrite. He benefits from outsourcing, and he's attacking outsourcing. But at least he's using that rhetoric, and that's why people go to him. Another issue that he just crushes the other Republicans on, Social Security. On Social Security, on Medicare, he said in the debates, I'm not going to cut it. I'm just not going to cut it. I'm not going to cut it. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, both on stage, like the giant idiots they are. We have to get serious about our fiscal situation, and we have to cut back. It's always, we have to cut back on programs that help you. Notice, they never say we have to cut back on the shit that doesn't help you, like our needless, unnecessary wars and our 900 military bases around the country and our billions of dollars in subsidies, which is a corporate welfare check, every year to big banks. You never have to cut back on those things. But when it comes to Social Security, Medicare, we got to cut. We got to save our nickels and our dimes and our pennies here. Come on, what are we doing? Trump comes along and says, I'm not going to cut it. So he argues for things like that. And also, let's keep it real, he's just so much more honest about race in the Republican Party. Where the other, Republican candidates tiptoe about it and they speak in coded language, Trump says, I hate Muslims. I hate Mexicans. I'm going to ban all Muslims from entering the country. I want to deport 11 million people. And so what you have is this xenophobia and bigotry that's pervasive in the Republican base, and a guy who's just saying it, no more coded language, and a guy who's actually populist on economic issues with his rhetoric, and then people go, that's why I like him. So you could have put together Rubio and Cruz. You could have put together Jeb and Scott Walker, who I know that these people thought would have been a dream ticket as well back at the beginning of the race. You could have put together whatever establishment Republicans you want. They wouldn't beat Trump. Why? Because they are establishment. That's the problem. The problem is you. All the people in the GOP establishment like, well, how could we have stopped him? No, paradigm is the problem. Is that you are the ones asking the question, how do we stop him? The voters dislike you. So whoever you put up, they're going to go, well, they're represented by those guys. So, we don't want that. We want somebody who's seemingly anti-establishment. So whatever, cockeyed, cockamamie answers they come up with today, it's backseat driving. They have no clue. And they could say all they want. Oh, and at one point in the article they say, we have internal polling that would show that Cruz and Rubio would crush Trump. No, you don't. No, you don't. You made that up. You made it up. They're like, oh, yeah, totally. It was 65% of the vote they got. Really? I'd love to see that. This is the same kind of internal polling, by the way, that Mitt Romney had when he ran against Obama. And on election night, you know why it took a while for him to concede? Everybody's like, why doesn't he concede? He got crushed. But he was backstage with his people going, but we had internal polling that showed that we beat Obama. Yeah, I'm sure they used the same pollsters. Cruz and Rubio would beat Trump. My ass cheeks they would. They've been wrong every step of the way, and they're going to continue to be wrong. They just don't get it. They are the problem. Okay. Let's do one more before we take our first break here. We got a Twitter war. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Here we go. I want you to take a guess who's involved in this Twitter war. Who's been involved in every Twitter war since the beginning of, since Twitter was invented? Who's been in a majority of the Twitter wars? So apparently Trump caught wind of Senator Elizabeth Warren coming after him. She really went in a social media post. And he responded. He went on a Twitter rant against her. So in typical Trump fashion, he said this. Let's properly check goofy Elizabeth Warren's records to see if she is Native American. I say she's a fraud. Very classy there, Mr. Trump. He says, goofy Elizabeth Warren, that's his nickname for her. You know how it's Crooked Hillary, Lion Ted, it's goofy Elizabeth Warren. Goofy Elizabeth Warren, Hillary Clinton's flunky, has a career that is totally based on a lie. She is not Native American. I hope corrupt Hillary chooses goofy Elizabeth Warren as her running mate. I will defeat them both. Okay, you know what's funny? Remember when we covered that analysis that found that Trump speaks at a third grade level? When I was reading his tweets on Elizabeth Warren, I thought, oh, that's totally true. Like, you can hear it. You can hear that it's like an elementary school kid, and this is the kind of attack an elementary school kid would use. Like, who does that? And as if that's an argument. So let's say his criticism is correct, which I don't believe, that, oh, she's not even Native American. Would that change anything about the policies that she's proposed to make the lives of the American people better? No, it has dick to do with that. But see, in Trump's mind, since he's a child, he goes, got her. Goofy Elizabeth Warren. You're so goofy. Goofy Elizabeth Warren. And guess what? I don't even think you're Native American. Gotcha. So Elizabeth Warren saw this criticism, and she fired back. She said, goofy Donald Trump? For a guy with the best words, which is something Trump had said in the past, that's a pretty lame nickname. Weak! She did the classic weak, the Trump thing, weak exclamation mark. She continues here. We saw what happened when birthers like Donald Trump attacked Obama. They lost big. American voters knew better. We saw when Scott Brown attacked my family and his staff made tomahawk chops and war whoops. They lost big. Massachusetts voters knew better. Donald Trump is a bully who has a single play in his playbook. Offensive lies thrown at anyone who calls him out. Donald Trump spews insults and lies because he can't have a conversation about his dangerous vision for America. But here's the thing. You can beat a bully. Not by tucking your tail and running, but by holding your ground. If you think recycling Scott Brown's hate-filled attacks on my family is going to shut me up, Donald Trump, think again, buddy. Weak! She continues, Donald Trump lied his way through the primaries without being held accountable. That's over. Whatever Donald Trump says, we won't shut up, we won't back down. This election is too important, and he won't step foot in the White House. So, after all of that, all the body blows that Elizabeth Warren landed on Trump, Trump responded with this. I love this part. He says, goofy Elizabeth Warren and her phony Native American heritage are on a Twitter rant. She's too easy. I'm driving her nuts. Goofy Elizabeth Warren is weak and ineffective. Does nothing. All talk, no action. Maybe her Native American name? Dude, stop, what are you doing? So he already sounded like a child at the beginning. But then she goes on like this detailed long rant against him. And by the way, I left some of the tweets out because she just keeps going. And then his response is to just reiterate the original thing he said. He's like, oh, yeah? Well, you're still goofy. And I still don't think you're Native American. Aha! And all talk, no action. Maybe that's her Native American name? Oh, Donald, what are you doing, man? No, Bill Maher had this guy nailed when he said something like, do you really want this guy in the White House where, like, there's a decent chance at 3 o'clock in the morning, your president is up, not doing anything important, working on a peace deal or something of that nature. No, he'd probably be in a Twitter war with Demi Lovato. Like, this is the guy you want there? Dude, he's too impulsive, and he's too crazy. And look, there's one thing that people are right about him on, where they say he has high emotional intelligence. So not actual intelligence, but like he knows how to feel the room and then kind of ride the wave of the momentum and the energy in the room, where he knows what to say and how to push the buttons and how to get the response and how to tap in to what people in a given room are feeling. I think that's totally true. But outside of that, so outside of knowing how to push the right buttons and knowing how to, you know, buck trends in the Republican Party and seem like a straight shooter, outside of that, I mean, look, the guy really is fundamentally a child. He's a half-decent con man who somehow got his way to this point. And for those of you who haven't seen it, let me do a recommendation here real quick. You have to watch John Oliver's takedown of Trump. John Oliver has an HBO show, and, man, he actually stuffed more facts into his piece on Trump than I've seen on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News combined this entire election. So he does this 20 or 30 minute or so just absolute takedown of Trump, exposing him for what he is. You have to take a look at that, because when you watch that, you get a real good sense as to exactly who he is. And then the stuff he says here, like against Elizabeth Warren, it begins to make a lot more sense. I mean, Donald Trump really is a guy who, for the longest time, years after the issue was settled, he was still out there saying about Donald Trump, like, yeah, I don't think he was born in America. I think he's a Muslim. I think he's this. I think he's that. And every time, even Bill O'Reilly, for example, called him out on this and was like, dude, that's not true. We did our own investigation over here at Fox News, and we found out not only does he have his short-form birth certificate, he has his long-form birth certificate. He has announcements in Hawaii newspapers at the time he was born, where they literally went into the archives and thought and saw that there were announcements of his birth. It is impossible. We know he was born in Hawaii. We know he was born in the United States. And Trump would respond in classic Trump fashion. But, you know, Bill, there are a lot of good people who say that that these things might not be real. And these are good people. And I guess you think they're bad people. But, Bill, they're good people. So there are a lot of good people, a lot of smart people, people smarter than me and you, are saying there's still questions here. So classic Donald Trump fashion. This is the person he still is, man. He just found a way, because the Republican establishment is so shitty and they're so disconnected even from their own voters. He found a way to tap into a populist nerve and also to really stop speaking in coded language about race and just say what the Republican-based voters are thinking, and he got himself to this point. Elizabeth Warren is right that the way to defeat somebody like this is to not back down and to use the facts against him, because guess what? Facts really are against him. Okay. So let's take a break. When we come back, I got another incredible story about a potential third-party run. You're not going to want to miss that. Who is considering a third-party run? Fascinating. And then I will unveil the devastating attack ad that I created against Donald Trump. You don't want to miss any of this. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. son of a bitch, we're back. And boy, do I have some stories for you. Okay. All right, here we go. The Washington Post is reporting that Mitt Romney is considering a third-party run for president. Just can't help himself. So The Hill explains here, Mitt Romney met this week with Bill Kristol, Mr. Wrong About Every Prediction He's Ever Made Ever, who is pushing for a third-party alternative to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. He said, quote, he came pretty close to being elected president, so I thought he may consider doing it, especially since he has been very forthright in explaining why Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton should not be president of the United States. It was not like you should do it. I wouldn't presume he'd do it, but I'm hoping that he begins to think about it a little more. His name is one of the names part of the discussion. Okay, so this is really interesting, man, because even if Romney doesn't run third party, the Republican establishment, there's some people in the Republican establishment who are going to want somebody to run third party who will represent the Republican establishment. So many of them don't like Donald Trump. Many of them, honestly, are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Many neoconservatives are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. As they've said, establishment Republicans, some of them are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But there are going to be some of them who are just like, I don't know, I got nobody. I hate Donald Trump, and I hate Hillary Clinton. So that opens the door for some sort of establishment Republican to step in and run third party. Now, I think they'd get their ass handed to them no matter what. The really fascinating scenario is if that happens, if there's some sort of establishment Republican figure that runs third party, you know what that does, right? That opens up the door for Bernie Sanders to run also. Now, assuming obviously everything goes the way it goes and that indeed we do have in the general election, bar any convention hoopla nonsense, we do have Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, and then you have a Republican step in as for an independent run, Bernie can do the same thing then. Now, I don't think there's any way, honestly, that Bernie would run third party if it's Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. Bernie would not be the first one to step in and say, I'm going to run also, because it's just math that would hand the election over to the Republican. That's just what would happen. The Democratic vote would be split between two people, and that would have the Republican win probably in a landslide victory. So, but I think Bernie would certainly consider it and maybe would even do it if you have this, you know, third-party candidate on the Republican side step in. There are going to be people, if that were to happen, if that were to unfold, there are going to be people in the Democratic establishment who would scream, the Democratic Party loyalists, you just lost us the election. Because obviously, if you have, let's say, Mitt Romney versus Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, Romney and Trump split the vote on the Republican side, although I think Trump gets many more votes than Romney, and then Hillary would win. But Bernie could ruin that, and he could step in, and honestly, if it's a four-way race, does Bernie Sanders have a shot at winning? Fuck yeah, he does. And everybody might say, well, Kyle, come on. Hillary, as of right now, has 2 million more votes than Bernie Sanders, so how the fuck can you say that? Well, it's easy. Many of these primaries didn't allow independents. When you allow independence, Bernie almost always wins. So independence in many states, including my own state, they were shut out of the process. And in those states, Hillary was more likely to win. But when you allowed independents to vote, and in general elections, independents are allowed to vote in every single state, well, then Bernie Sanders wins. And on top of that, you look at some national polls now, and he's beating Hillary Clinton. Never mind the fact that he beats the Republican candidates always by a wider margin than Hillary Clinton. So if you have a Republican, a third-party Republican hop in the race, an independent run from an establishment Republican, then I think Bernie should get in the race, and I think he'd have a very, very good chance at winning. So, but a lot would be dependent on a lot, though. So you'd have to have, you know, open and fair debates, which is a huge question mark. You have to have him allowed to get on the ballot in every single state, which again is a big question mark because the way our system is set up, the two parties would try to shut out any independent run. So it would be difficult, but it certainly would be possible. And it's definitely a scenario to think about. But I just want to say in conclusion here, do you have any idea horribly Mitt Romney would lose if he ran third party? Dude, Like, they don't get it. The Republican establishment doesn't get it. They are the only ones who are not satisfied with Trump on the right. It's the Republican establishment. They're the ones, the elite Republicans, the moneyed interests, the Wall Street-connected Republicans. The Republican base, they're smitten with him, regardless of what you've heard. They are smitten with him. That's why he won in a crushing fashion. I mean, he curb-stomped his way to the nomination. The idea that there's some sort of deep dissatisfaction with him. Only, you know, his unfavorables are high only when you poll the entire country for a general election, but so are Hillary Clinton's. So, yeah, he's disliked, but he got so many more votes than everybody else. So this idea that Mitt Romney's going to step in and be a savior and he'll get a lot of votes, he would get destroyed and it would be glorious because yet again you'd have that Bill Kristol bubble popping. How after every single debate, every single, primary, peak Trump, he's done, and he would just be wrong every single time. It'd be the same thing here. He'd be out there saying, Mitt Romney's going to win this election, and Mitt Romney would get negative 18% in the vote. It would be glorious. Okay. Now, oh no, are you ready? Now, I'm going to warn you guys in advance here that So the way that this ad is structured, there is some writing on the screen, so you're not going to really get the full effect listening to the live show here where you can only hear it, you can't see it. But definitely check this out later on YouTube because I guarantee you on YouTube, I mean, this is just a devastating Trump ad. So let me set this up for you, and then I unveil the monster himself. So last week, we showed you Hillary Clinton's first few ads against Trump. In my opinion, one of them was so-so, and the other was just bad. So the one that was bad was when she took the words of other Republicans, like Mitt Romney and Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz, and used them against Trump. I didn't like that ad because guess what? The only people in the country more disliked than Trump are Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, and all the Republicans that you used their words against him. So you're not doing anything. You're not getting anybody's vote. You just are attacking him with people who are shittier than him. Doesn't mean anything. The one that was so-so was more policy-oriented and more focused on how extreme he is. But it was still, there was too much going on. It was too long of an ad. It was over a minute and 10 seconds, I think. So what I did is I took the time here to create an attack ad against Trump that would work. I created an ad that shows anybody who wants to attack Trump what an attack ad against Trump should look like if you really, really want to win the election. So, without further ado, here's an anti-Trump attack ad, secular talk style. On the screen, it says, terrorist Don wants to kill civilians, which creates more jihadists. Terrorist Don, ISIS' best friend. And then it shows dead kids and somebody burning the American flag. That's how you do it, bitch. That's how you do it. They would never in a million years run that ad. As much as they hate Donald Trump and they despise him and they want to win and they want to win by any means necessary, they don't want to win this way. Why? The truth fucking hurts. And the truth is really, really ugly on this front. And let's understand something very clearly. If you think that's a low blow, you have no clue what Trump is about. You don't know his positions. You don't know what he said. Notice how it was him saying what he said there. I didn't put those words in his mouth. He said, we need to go after their families. We have to go after their families. Don't just go after the terrorists. Go after their families. So that means let's attack innocent people in the Middle East. Let's attack women. Let's attack children. Let's attack toddlers. Let's attack grandpas. Let's attack grandmas. That's what he's saying. So, you can whine and bitch and moan and cry all day long if you're a Trump supporter, and that's unfair, and that's, you're going too hard against him, and why don't you use kid gloves on him? Why are you being a little bitch? Why are you being a whiny PC bitch doing PC outrage because you can't take the truth about your candidate? And that's the bottom line about this ad. It's a hard-hitting ad, but it's true. What I'm saying is absolutely true. That is the definition of terrorism, according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, that those are things that he said, and it indeed is true that you're going to create more jihadists if you do that. Never mind the fact that you committed war crimes, and you should be in fucking jail if you do that. So this is how you attack a guy who's a fucking crazy person and who said stupid shit like this. You bring up his idiotic shit that he said, and you play it back in his face. You put some scary music in the background, and you lay it out for people. You explain it. Hey, this is the definition of terrorism. What you're doing is terrorism. You're going to create more jihadists. You're the terrorist's best friend. You're terrorist Don. See, the Democrats, they unveiled a couple of nicknames for Donald Trump, because you know how Donald Trump does nicknames for everybody. Lion Ted Cruz, Little Marco, Crooked Hillary. This is what he does. Very simple, a goofy Elizabeth Warren, he said. So the Democrats did some brainstorming. You know what they came up with? I'm not kidding. Dangerous Donald. That's so sad it hurts to even say it. Matt Binder on Twitter was joking around because of how pathetically weak this is, and he sent out a picture of Donald Duck. He's like, wait until the Democrats find out this one. Like, that's damn near calling him Donald Duck. That doesn't work. And then the other one was even worse. Instead of the presumptive nominee, they're calling him the presumptuous nominee. You're so bad at marketing. It's so sad. It's like, oh, you're so stupid. All of you have no clue what you're doing. You're going to get your asses handed to you by Donald Trump. So what do you do? How do you actually combat this guy who said horrific things? You run the ad that I just showed you. Again, he said it. I didn't say it. He said the Geneva Conventions are the problem. He said we should torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. He said we should bring back more than just waterboarding. You know, he's the one who said we should kill civilians in the Middle East. Okay, so let's lay it out for you. And what should you really call him? Terrorist Don. Terrorist Don wants to kill civilians. Terrorist Don wants to copy ISIS. He doesn't want to beat ISIS. He wants to become ISIS. He wants to kill civilians, which is what they do. This is what you do. You let him know. You let everybody know. You're making America less safe with your games and your antics and your idiocy and your bullshit. This is exactly how Barry Goldwater was defeated. They ran tough ads against him that said he's the guy who's going to unleash the bomb. They had ads that showed a little girl getting incinerated in a nuclear attack. Why? Because he unleashed the bomb against Russia. Russia unleashed it back against us. And then everybody's dead. So you want to vote for the crazy person who's going to unleash the bomb? Be my guest, by all means. But if you do that, you're stupid. You're an idiot. You're a moron. You don't care about the future of the country. This is how you attack, because it's true. In the case of Donald Trump, it's totally true. Not a single part of that ad was unfair. It was tough, and it was fair. It's using definitions, showing you the definitions, taking his word, showing you what he wants to do, and then crushing him with it. By the way, you run that ad and there will be an uproar. Oh my God, everybody would be so outraged on the right. How dare you do that? When we do violence, it's better. But you know what you just did? You changed the topic of the conversation. You changed the framing. So now people are having the conversation, is Donald Trump a terrorist or not? You're fighting on your grounds there. This is the same thing with Richard Nixon. Remember when Richard Nixon said, I'm not a crook. Well, wait, and then everybody's going, wait, are you a crook? Because he had to say, I'm not X. I am not a crook. So people are going, why are we having the conversation about whether or not you're a crook? What did you do? Are you a crook? You might be a crook, aren't you? He's got to be a crook. He said he's not a crook. What are you hiding? Like, when they have to respond to the allegations, and the allegations are extreme, and in this case, very true, well, you win. That's it. You win. He has to say, I'm not a terrorist. Therefore, people are going to go, is he a terrorist? What did he do? Oh, he said that? Oh, my God. And then the more they whine and bitch and moan, you ready for this? The more I'd run that ad. So you run it, it'll be controversy, outrage, everybody's mad. And you go, that's great. Now we're going to double the amount of money we spent on that ad. And then guess what? It needs to become a duh to people, where people are like, yeah, terrorist on, of course. Oh, you want to vote for the guy who wants to kill civilians? Damn, you agree a lot more with ISIS than you think you do. this is, you want it to be that kind of reaction with people. You're voting for a crazy person. You're voting for a lunatic. You're voting for somebody who's promising to commit war crimes. They would never run this ad. They would never do it. They suck at marketing. They suck at framing. They just don't know how to be direct and to really throw haymakers and knock out their opponents. They've never known how to do it, ever, 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 ever. And the Republicans are geniuses at it. Look at what they did against John Kerry. They turned his biggest asset into a strike against him, namely the fact that he was a war hero. They said, they swift-boated him, as they say. Oh, so you say that you're a hero. You have medals and whatnot that show that you're a hero, but I had these Republican hacks who claim to have seen you at the time, and they say, maybe not. Maybe you're not a hero. Maybe you're a war criminal. Maybe, you know, you're the weak bitch here. Meanwhile, George W. Bush, who was fucking AWOL when it was time for him to serve the country, all of a sudden he's painted as the war hero when it was Kerry who was the war hero. You're turning their biggest asset into their biggest weakness. In the case of Trump, you don't even need to do that. I mean, you can do that in the sense that I'd also run ads about his business career. Oh, brilliant businessman. Run the headlines. Donald Trump files for fourth company bankruptcy. Oh, brilliant businessman. Run the headlines. Donald Trump inherited hundreds of millions of dollars from his father. He likes to say, I only took a small loan of $1 million. He didn't. Later on, when his dad passed away, he got way more than that. Way more. Don't fall. How did you fall for the marketing? So, show, oh, business genius? Well, then why did you inherit hundreds of millions of dollars? And why did you go bankrupt four times? Anybody can be a business genius if they inherit that much money. And guess what? They won't go bankrupt four times. Maybe you suck at business. Maybe you're the worst in the world at business. How about you're the worst businessman in American history? How about that? This is what you do. This is a take the strength, turn it into a weakness. But with Donald Trump, you could also take his weaknesses and highlight the fuck out of them. You said you would kill civilians in the Middle East. That's not something we just let go and slide by, okay? You are going to create more jihadists. You are going to make us less safe. And it would be absolute lunacy for somebody to vote for you. And if they know that and they still vote for you, well, then we know they're also crazy people. So I'm going to run that ad more. The more outrage you get, the more I'm going to run the ad. And I'm going to make it a duh in people's mind. I'm going to change the framing of the conversations. People go, is he a terrorist or is he not a terrorist? Wow, we're having that conversation. And you're going to make it so we're fighting on our terms. We dictate this from here on out. No more, you're the more aggressive one. You know, you're the one who's on the offense. You're the one who's appealing more in a populist way. We're going to undercut all of that because we're going to portray you for the maniac that you are. Okay. Again, I know you guys couldn't see it all, but you're going to see it later on YouTube, and it is amazing. I'm very proud of it, if you can't tell. All right, let me do one more, and then we'll take our final break. Secretary of State John Kerry gave a commencement address to students at Northeastern University, and he attacked Trump in a very curious way. He said the following: when you consider the range of challenges that the world is struggling with, most countries don't lie awake at night worrying about America's presence. They worry about what would happen in our absence. We cannot be seduced. So his way of ripping Trump here is to rip non-interventionism. I mean, that's a really silly way of doing it because Trump half the time is totally interventionist. I mean, we've covered the stories where he says he wants to get more involved in the Middle East and he wants to kill civilians on purpose in the Middle East. He wants to do terrorism in the Middle East. You would think that if you want to attack him, you attack those things because those things are absolutely crazy. But no, what John Kerry does is he takes the half of the shit that Trump says that makes sense, when half the time he says we should be less involved around the world and we should rebuild our infrastructure and let Putin and other people fight ISIS. He takes the stuff that makes sense and he goes, isn't that the stuff that's stupid? No, that's the smart stuff. When he says that stuff, everybody should cheer him on because he's right when he says that stuff. But see, that shows you, look at the framing from John Kerry. John Kerry used to be anti-war, used to be an activist and a protester. Now he's gone straight down that slippery slope and now he's fully interventionist. I mean, look at this, man. He was arguing all along to get involved from Syria from the very beginning. It would have been a disaster then. It would be a disaster now. But he's saying, most countries lie awake at night not worrying about America's presence, worrying about what would happen in our absence. No, no, no. See, that is just factually incorrect. In Iraq, what are they worried about? They're worried about our presence. In Afghanistan, what are they worried about? Our presence. Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. You go down the list. They're worried about our presence. And on top of that, there was a Gallup poll done. They asked 66,000 people in 65 different countries. And they said, who's the biggest threat to world peace? What did they answer? The United States. A plurality picked the United States. We were number one, the biggest threat to world peace. So you're just wrong when you say, people are worried about our absence, not our presence. No, most people say we're the biggest threat to world peace. They're worried about our presence. Now, you could say they're right or wrong, but that is what they're worried about. That's an indisputable fact. And then on top of all that, he doesn't get the sentiment and the feeling of the American people. Another Gallup poll just came out. 57% of Americans say we should deal with our own problems and other countries should deal with their own problems. 57%. The majority of the American people are non-interventionists. Hey, we got to take care of our own shit. You guys could take care of your shit. We're going to take care of our own shit. But John Kerry's like, I know how I'll attack Trump. I'll attack him by saying he's crazy when he says we shouldn't be involved everywhere around the world. We have 900 military bases, dude. We've spent trillions on unnecessary wars. Why do you think it's smart to argue that? And that gets to the main point here. If the Democrats keep using attacks like this against Trump, he will become the president of the United States. And we're already seeing signs of that, where Trump now is trying to pivot to the left. Again, you're a sucker if you believe him. But now he's saying even more liberal shit, and Hillary's moving to the right and out-hawking him in many respects. If Hillary wants to argue from that position to the right of Trump on foreign policy, the Democrats will lose the election. You heard it here first. There's 1,001 ways Hillary can lose this thing. Running a PC outrage-based campaign, outflanking him on the right. If she does these things, she will lose. And John Kerry smugly will think they're going to win as he argues for more war. But no, you'd get crushed if you do that. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Bernie Sanders took a swing at corporate media. And then the leader of Al-Qaeda released a message that's really important and really telling. And I want to share it with you guys because it's often overlooked. So stay right there. We'll be right back with all that and much more.
Across the border. All right, welcome back, bitch. Let's talk a little bit about Bernie.
Bernie Sanders took a swing at corporate media on the Rachel Maddow Show in an interview. He said, "I think we've got to think about the way that the Democratic Party, for a start, starts funding the equivalent of Fox Television. I think the American people are going to have to say to NBC and ABC and CBS and CNN, you know what? Forget the political gossip. Politics is not a soap opera. Talk about the real damn issues facing the country." Okay, so classic Bernie, which is awesome. He goes on corporate media to call out corporate media to their face. He's done it in almost every, you know, town hall event or debate. He said it to Chuck Todd's face before. Chuck Todd smugly, you know, said when they cut to break virtually every time in that town hall, "We're going to go get paid by our corporate sponsors now." Like, yeah, shut up. You know Bernie's right. You know there's an incentive problem. There's conflicts of interest. You're not going to cover the real issues, so on and so forth. But there's one aspect of this that I think we should correct, which is that there already is the Democratic Party network. That's MSNBC. Now, understand, that is not the same as having a liberal network or a progressive network. This is the Democratic Party network. So Fox News, as everybody knows, is the propaganda arm of the Republican Party. CNN is deeply mired in the neutrality bias. They call it 50-50 no matter what. And you have MSNBC that is the propaganda arm of the Democratic Party. Now, again, some people might not like that. It may make them uncomfortable to hear it, but it's totally true. You have the hosts on MSNBC, specifically at night. Now, in the morning, you have Morning Joe, who's an establishment insider, right-leaning. Almost everybody else in the primetime lineup, unless they're moving away from it, and they might be, but as of right now, you have people who basically more or less represent the Democratic Party. They're loyalists to the Democratic Party. Sometimes you have Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow kind of buck the party a little bit, but most of the time, people like Chris Matthews, for example, just deep, diehard Republican, Democratic Party loyalist hacks. Call it what it is, man. So they'll go with the Hillary Clinton line, they'll go with the Debbie Wasserman Schultz line, and they will exclude people who are real liberals and real progressives like Bernie. They're more representative of Hillary than Bernie because they're insiders, okay? So the answer is not to have the Democratic Party start funding the equivalent of Fox Television. The answer is to just have the people, the American people, fund their own outlets to get their information. Now, this is where, and perhaps I'm biased because I'm in this business and I benefit from this business, but that's where I think new media comes in. That's where you get people like TYT and David Pakman and myself, and you have the new up-and-comers like the Humanist Report and the Benjamin Dixon Show. So this is new media, and I like to think that this is the kind of model, business model, that we're going for, where we're not beholden to any political party, we're not beholden to the establishment, we're not beholden to corporate interests. We respond to the demands of the people, and we represent not only facts and information and data and news, but also a perspective and an opinion that actually is in line with the will of the overwhelming majority of the American people, according to the opinion polls. And so that's the model that over time will hopefully replace the corporate media model. Now, I'm not like a lot of liberals where I'm against all corporations by definition. No, I think there are good corporations and bad corporations, but mostly they need to be held accountable. And the problem with the corporate media we have right now is how large and disconnected they are, and how they have people who are part of the elite, who are in the boardrooms and who run the companies and who have massive political power, and you have this incestuous relationship between big business and government. I'm not anti-corporation. It's okay to have a small corporation and to have it be in touch with the needs of the people who are clients of the corporation. And that's where we're at, man. I mean, I'm not a corporation, but I know TYT is a corporation, and there's others in the business who are a corporation. And the second we're not listening to the will of the people in the audience, we're done. You're done. And I've always said, if you really want to test how much free market appeal CNN has, MSNBC has, Fox News has, take some of their prominent hosts and give them a YouTube show and see how well they do. It's sink or swim on YouTube. You have no advertising budget. You can't get your name out there at all. It's all got to be word of mouth. It's all got to be organic growth. So give Wolf Blitzer his own YouTube channel. Don't give him any of the money that CNN gets and all the, ooh, the flashy big graphics and all the stuff that can get you hooked in where you'd watch it anyway. Just give Wolf Blitzer my setup. Give him a mic, give him a seat, turn the camera on and say, go. He'd get -8 subscribers, okay? He doesn't have free market appeal. So that old model of media is dying, and it is going to be replaced by what Bernie's alluding to here. He said we need the Democratic Party to start funding the equivalent of Fox. I think what he meant is we need real liberals, real progressives, real American people funding their own version of media and see what happens. And that's what happens, and that's what led to the growth of TYT, Tom Hartman, who I know Bernie Sanders loves, and the rest of us. So he's right, but I think he misstated Democratic Party where he should have said liberals and progressives, and I think we're working on it, Bernie. You know, he might say, oh, we're not there yet, and that may be true, but give us time. We're already beating CNN in the middle of the day. So you take Wolf Blitzer's 1 or 2 hour block and compare it to my numbers for a full day, and we beat them. It's just a matter of time until that's also the case for evening shows. In fact, TYT is already beating evening shows. So give us time. It's happening, Bernie. And we got the right message, and we're going to represent the people, and we're going to give you news and information, unlike the shitty horse race aspect and sensationalism aspect and the various biases they have now in the corporate media structure. Okay. Now let's go to a really interesting story about foreign policy that people, leaders in the West, should really listen to, but they won't because they're too arrogant. The leader of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, released a message to his followers on Sunday. This is something that he does every once in a while, like every few months. And yet again, he reiterated an important point that the leaders in the West seem to always miss or seem to ignore. So first off, how's this for a funny fact? He called ISIS, quote, extremists and renegades. You know you're fucked up when even Al-Qaeda is like, bro, pump your brakes. Reel it back in a little bit. You guys are too crazy. Extremists over here, am I right? Renegades. God, calm down. You know, what are you doing? So that really does tell you something about the nature of ISIS. But then he said this about fighting America. Quote, we have to want the unity of the Mujahideen in Syria so it will be liberated from the Russians and Western crusaders. My brothers, the matter of unity is a matter of life or death for you. Okay, so let me put this in context and perspective for you. For those of you who don't know, rival jihadist groups indeed aren't unified. And without a unifying force, they'll fight each other. And they've been and they've done it. So ISIS was created because it was an offshoot of an Al-Qaeda branch. And they disagreed with central leadership in Al-Qaeda, so they broke off. They're their own jihadist group. And then there are other jihadist groups as well. Some of them have allegiances to different groups. Some of them don't. You know, the Taliban, for example, they're, a Pashtun jihadist group. You also have Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram, and the list goes on and on. So you have these groups that are splintered. Oftentimes they fight each other. Oftentimes some of them absolutely hate each other. And here you have the leader of Al-Qaeda saying in a message, broadcasting it to the world, we will fight each other unless there's a unifying force. There's this opportunity that presents itself to allow us, all of our the splinter jihadist groups, to unify to fight this force. And who is that unifying force? Westerners. They say, well, if America's here, if Britain's here, if Russia's here. So there's all this intervention in Syria for a variety of different reasons, depending on who's intervening. And they say, well, look, this is how we unified. We unified to fight the evil infidels, the others. But again, he's telling you, if you remove the unifying force, so let's say Russia's out of there, the U.S. is out of there, Britain's out of there, the West is out of there. Perhaps we still give humanitarian support, for example, to the Kurds, as I'm in favor of, and to others in the region who are fighting. Great. But if you remove the unifying force, which is the West and Russia and everybody else who's intervening, he's saying we'll fight each other. Al-Qaeda will fight ISIS. ISIS will fight Al-Qaeda. Who knows how the others factor in, the other jihadist groups and the other various rebel groups. They will fight each other if you just get the fuck out of the way. And this is a point that Bill Maher has made before, to his credit, on his show. And this is also a point that we covered, because every single time Zawahiri releases a message, this is one of the things that he says. He laid it out in even more detail in a previous message, and we covered it on the show, where he said, all right, here's the deal. We know we all hate each other, all of the jihadist groups here, and we know we're fighting and whatnot, but we will unify because we have to fight the crusaders and the infidels, and we have to fight the Russia and America and all them, and then after we take care of that, then we can go back to fucking each other up. Well, if you're the U.S. and you hear that, you go, oh, I'm out tomorrow, because you know that the best way to beat them is to let them fight each other and kill each other. Imagine 90% of the people in Al-Qaeda kill 90% of the people in ISIS. That's a win-win. Isn't that exactly what we want? That's what I want. Why wouldn't you want that? You'd be crazy not to want that. But in our infinite stupidity in Washington, not only do they want to keep getting involved, but we have Trayus, who has said, let's arm Al-Qaeda to fight ISIS. Because ISIS, they're, quote, extremists and renegades, just like Zawahiri said. So Petraeus agrees, yeah, they're even worse. So let's arm other jihadists to fight those other jihadists. And then, gosh golly, I bet there's no way that this will hurt us in the long run, and they'll never turn those weapons on us. It's not like Al-Qaeda has a history of attacking the United States of America. It's not like there's a history where Reagan armed the Mujahideen in Afghanistan to fight the Russians, and then eventually they turn those weapons on us. No, we do this all the time. We arm people who turn the weapons on us. Petraeus was like, let's arm Al-Qaeda to fight ISIS. That just happened. So not only do they not want to get out, they want to stay involved, and they want to arm one of the worst groups to arm. How stupid are you? But that's the thing. Not only are they stupid, they also have poor incentives too. Military-industrial complex, we got to sell more weapons, we got to sell more tanks, we got to be more involved, because some people make a lot more money when you do that, and you keep the system going, and the corruption keeps turning, okay? So there's a million and one reasons why they're going in the wrong direction, but they are going in the wrong direction, and if you don't want to take it from me, take it from the fucking head of Al-Qaeda, who's telling you. He's admitting, yeah, if they're not here, we'll fight each other. Great, that's a win-win. I want you to fight each other, and while you're at it, please, both of you die. Okay. Now we go to Bill O'Reilly. I love this story. This story is funny to me. Bill O'Reilly is going to defend Donald Trump for a hilarious tweet that he sent out on Cinco de Mayo. Let's watch.
Yesterday, Cinco de Mayo, Donald Trump tweeted out a picture of himself eating tacos. Above the picture, he said that he loves Hispanics. Almost immediately, the president of the militant organization La Raza tweeted out, quote, eating a taco or wearing a sombrero doesn't cut it with our community in 2016. Trump is clueless, offensive, and self-promoting. So eating a taco on Cinco de Mayo is now offensive? That's like saying eating corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day and saying you love the Irish is offensive. That's how insane America culture has become.
O'Reilly is such a character, man. I mean, I think he probably doesn't believe a lot of the stuff that he says. Like, there's no way that he doesn't get why people responded the way that they did to Trump's tweet. But he goes out there, it's almost like he's pretending to be dense, and he's pivoting to use a shitty argument to fight against it. Okay, Bill, don't make it so I have to explain this to you. It's not offensive because he's eating tacos. Nobody gives a fuck what Donald Trump eats. Nobody's going to go, hey, you're racist simply because you're eating tacos or burritos or whatever the fuck it is. Nobody cares about that. What's ridiculous is he's pandering. So here's a guy who said, I want to build the wall and I'm going to make the Mexicans pay for it. Here's a guy who says, I want to kick out over 10 million undocumented immigrants from the country. I want to literally have deportation forces. Many of those people would be Hispanic. And then here he is on Cinco de Mayo acting like, hey, none of that matters at all in any way. I'm eating tacos, therefore I love Hispanics. No, see, that insults the intelligence of Hispanics, Bill. Because he doesn't love Hispanics. He obviously doesn't love Hispanics. What he's doing is he's just saying, huh, hey, huh, I'm eating the food you eat, huh? You like me now, right? What if I wear this sombrero, like the person said in that tweet? Yeah, like that's the next step. Who wears a sombrero, huh? I'm like you guys. You know what this reminds me of? When Mitt Romney went on, I think it was Telemundo, and he used a darker bronzer for his face. So he appeared to be more tan slash more ethnic than he indeed is. Like, people would say, that's kind of offensive and ridiculous. And Bill Riley, oh, so getting a suntan on the beach is now offensive. So laying on a beach is now offensive. Is that what you're saying? Laying on a beach is offensive. No, stop fucking strawmanning us and putting words in our mouth. What we're saying is, you don't love Hispanics. And the bottom line is, perhaps Hispanics, Bill, actually care about policy? But see, in his mind, because he does think in this bigoted way, he's like, huh, well, what do you mean? They're the minorities. Do they really care about that stuff? I don't think so. So, yeah, that's how you appeal to them. You eat tacos. Am I right? No, they actually listen to what the fuck you say in terms of policy, and they go, I agree or I disagree with that. God, he's so – again, I think he's purposefully being dense here because there's no way he actually listens to the response from people and goes, that's unreasonable. No, it's Trump is pandering, and he's making up that he loves Hispanics when all of his policies prove he does not. So that's why it's a problem. Again, unbelievable. So Bill O'Reilly in classic Bill O'Reilly fashion, master of deflection and changing the topic and argument, this is what he does here. Oh, you're mad for totally understandable reasons about Trump pandering, and meanwhile his policies don't support Hispanics, as he says he loves Hispanics. Well, now I'm going to change the conversation to, you think it's offensive when white people eat tacos. That's not what they said, Bill, and you know that. And he also called the tweet from the woman there, the militant organization. Militant organization? I looked up the thing. It's a Hispanic civil rights group in America. That's not militant at all. They're just a Hispanic civil rights group. Anybody who advocates for civil rights of minorities, by definition, is militant in Bill O'Reilly's mind. Unbelievable. All right, let's continue here. And let's go to Iceland. Interesting story here. Iceland magazine has an incredible poll released this year on religiosity, and the findings are historic. So they say less than half of Icelanders claim they are religious, and more than 40% of young Icelanders identify as atheist. All right, let's pause there and just bring up what it's like in the U.S. Now, in the U.S., the nuns, meaning no affiliation with organized religion, that's as high as 23%. But that doesn't mean that they're all atheists. When you go to what percentage are atheists, it's usually 5% or actually less. So for in Iceland, more than 40% of young Icelanders identifying as atheists, that is a gigantic number, and that's way bigger than the U.S. All right, more. 93.9% of Icelanders younger than 25 believed the world was created in the Big Bang. 6.1% had either no opinion or thought it had come into existence through some other means. And 0% believed it had been created by God. Good googly moogly. So when you poll people under the age of 25 in Iceland, none of them. They actually say 0.00%. So that means literally nobody of the people under the age of 25 that they asked said that God created the universe. It's over. Game, set, match. Fucking first round KO. Religion is dead in some places. Iceland is one of them. And the progression and the trends are moving further and further towards irreligiosity. We're going to win, man. Now, understand, the worldwide picture is significantly different because each country is massively different. There's actually been an uptick in Christianity around the world and an uptick in Islam around the world. It just so happens that in some places in the West, there's been an increase in irreligiosity. But here's the thing, man. Through education, through information, through more easily available internet, all these things, through modernity and economic development, all of these things push people more in the direction of being less religious. Because guess what? Myths tend to go away the more knowledge and data you pack in your head. And as society progresses, it literally progresses, and we get more information. And as long as that's more easily available and spread throughout the world, well, then it's harder for people to be religious. Having a good, solid educational system that teaches facts is a fundamentalist religious person's worst nightmare, because then sooner or later the people are not going to believe their nonsense. Well, we got to keep moving in that direction. So Iceland is ahead of everybody. The U.S. is doing okay because we still have a growing irreligious population. And around the world, some of the trends are not good, but I'm telling you, the winning argument over time is on our side because we actually can convince people. The only way to really convince somebody of the opposite, to actually believe in a literal interpretation of a holy book, to be fundamentalist, one of the only ways to do that is to just raise them in that environment. If you raise them from when they're a kid to believe X, Y, and Z, and you brainwash them, well, then they're going to believe it. So, but if you remove the fucked up upbringing and the brainwashing into a cult-like behavior, well, then it's so much more rare to have people convert. It happens where people will convert to a fundamentalist interpretation of a religion, but it's so much more rare than when you're just raised in that fundamentalist environment and the framework is already there. So if you have more education and then people over time start raising people to be less and less religious, well, then eventually we win, and I think that is going to happen. It's just a matter of when. Okay. Let me do one more here, or perhaps two more. We'll see if we can squeeze it in. And then we'll call it a day. We have an interesting story coming out of Turkey. The New York Times has an article about the continuing authoritarianism in Erdogan's Turkey. Apparently, the government decided to go all out against the press. They say a Turkish court handed down a long-awaited judgment against two prominent journalists on Friday, sentencing them to more than 5 years in prison for releasing state secrets. The verdict came just hours after one of the journalists narrowly escaped an attack by a gunman in front of the courthouse. By the way, I wonder who sent that gunman. The two journalists, Can Dündar and Erdem Gul, were accused of espionage and attempting to topple the government through their reporting about weapons shipments by Turkey's spy agency to rebels opposed to the government of President Bashar al-Assad of Syria. Okay, now, why is this such a big deal? Well, RT explains here in an exclusive that they released on March 4th, quote, Turkey protects and supplies al-Nusra camps at its border. And this was told by people on the ground, Kurds, to RT. And they have, you know, a lot of evidence of this, and it's been proven at this point. Indeed, Turkey is arming and supplying al-Nusra in Syria to fight Assad. What's another name for al-Nusra? Al-Qaeda in Syria. The government of Turkey is arming and supplying Al-Qaeda. So you have Turkish journalists who are like, we got to release this story, the story that shows that Turkey is arming and supplying some Syrian rebels who are jihadists. We got to release this story. We got to release this story. And what do? They lock them up. They lock them up. First of all, there was an assassination attempt tried. Again, I wonder who sent those people to do the assassination attempt. Question mark. But then they lock them up. They say, oh, you're doing espionage and you're attempting to topple the government. No, they're literally just reporting on the facts of what you're doing. In many ways, this reminds me of Edward Snowden. Because Edward Snowden's like, oh, hey, by the way, I read the Constitution. The Fourth Amendment says we need to protect people from unreasonable searches and seizures, and if the government searches, they need a specific warrant describing the specific things they're looking for. Well, Edward Snowden goes, hey, everybody's getting their shit spied on. This is wildly violating the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And what happens? The government tries to crack down on him. So it's not like we need to crack down on the people who are really violating the Constitution and therefore American law. They're saying, no, crack down on the person who leaked the facts that the government is doing that. Same thing here. Crack down on the journalists who released the facts that the Turkish government is in bed with Al-Qaeda and jihadists. God, how dare you release that secret that makes us look bad? No. How dare you do the thing that makes you look bad? You need to fix your shit. They did nothing wrong. They're doing their job. Unbelievable. Erdogan in Turkey, away from secularism, away from democracy, and towards fundamentalism in a stunning fashion. Okay, this is the guy who has kids locked up for tearing down posters of him. This is the guy who had people punished when a husband told on his wife because his wife turned the TV channel anytime she saw Erdogan come on. Can't have that. So he went to the government and complained. They're punishing that woman. People get locked up for making social media posts that make fun of Erdogan. He literally says free speech doesn't include insults. Yeah, it does, bitch. That's kind of why it's free speech. Free speech. The guy is thin-skinned, he's idiotic, he's authoritarian, and he has a complete and utter lockdown on a country, and now he's arming Al-Qaeda. That's a recipe for disaster. So in many ways, RIP Turkey. I really don't have enough time to squeeze in this last one, so we're going to call the day 3.5 minutes early here. But what are you going to do, baby? I'll have something for you lined up tomorrow, though. I'll have some good stuff lined up for you tomorrow. Don't forget, later on, when the thing gets uploaded with the Trump ad, don't forget to watch it on YouTube. You got to watch it on YouTube because the ad itself is fucking devastating. There's some writing on the screen that you didn't see listening to the live show here, but check it out later. I'm telling you, man. I'm very proud of that ad. And that's it. So we're back for the week, and we'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Everybody have a great rest of the day. Much love. Later.